So we're going to hear a bit more about that amazing grace. It's time for us to read a few verses from the Bible before Paul comes and explains it more to us. So you'll find a little white book, Gospel of Luke, in the chair in front of you. And we're going to turn to page 26. We're going to look at Luke chapter 7. That's page 26 in the little white Gospels. So starting at verse 36, it says, "A sinful woman forgiven. One of the Pharisees asked Jesus to eat with him. He went into the Pharisee's house and took his place at the table. And behold, a woman of the city, who was a sinner, when she learnt that he was reclining at the table in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster flask of ointment. And standing behind him at his feet, weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears, and wiped them with the hair of her head, and kissed his feet, and anointed them with the ointment. Now when the Pharisee who invited him saw this, he said to himself, 'If this man were a prophet, he would have known who and what sort of woman this is who is touching him, for she is a sinner.' And Jesus answering said to him, 'Simon, I have something to say to you.' And he answered, 'Say it, teacher.' A certain moneylender had two debtors. One owed 500 denarii and the other 50. When they could not pay, he cancelled the debt of them both. Now which one of them will love him more?" Well, Simon answered, "The one, I suppose, for whom he cancelled the larger debt." And he said to him, "You have judged rightly." Then turning towards the woman, he said to Simon, "Do you see this woman? I entered your house. You gave me no water for my feet, but she has wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You gave me no kiss, but from the time I came in, she has not ceased to kiss my feet. You did not anoint my head with oil, but she has anointed my feet with ointment. Therefore, I tell you, her sins, which are many, are forgiven, for she loved much. But he who is forgiven little loves little." And he said to her, "Your sins are forgiven." Then those who were at the table with him began to say among themselves, "Who is this who even forgives sins?" And he said to the woman, "Your faith has saved you. Go in peace."
Thanks so much for reading. You might find it helpful, I think, to keep that Bible passage open in front of you. We'll be turning back to it in just a moment. Again, thanks very much for having me. It's been lovely to be with you today. Now, many years ago, I met with a couple. They wanted to meet with me to talk about having their baby baptised. And I can still remember sitting at their kitchen table, working through with them the baptism service and what it would mean for them. And as we talked, the wife, this new mum, asked me, "You know, would it be all right for me to come to church?" And I said, "Yes, of course, you'd be welcome anytime. We'd love to see you." And as I said that, she started to well up. And through the tears, she said to me, "But I've done so many bad things in my life. I find it impossible to believe that God would accept me," she said. Now, over the years, I've met a lot of people like that, people who think that they're actually too bad for God. You know, these are the sorts of people who are very aware of the ways they've stuffed up in life, plagued by the things they've done that they're deeply ashamed of, worried that if anybody found out about those things, they'd be completely written off. One person expressed it brilliantly when they said, "I just wish I had a giant eraser to rub out all the mistakes in my life." Well, look, this Bible passage that's just been read for us so well this evening is brilliant for that kind of person, for anyone who thinks, "I'm too bad to be forgiven." Look with me, if you will, at this remarkable story, which begins, as we see, in verse 36, bottom of page 26, verse 36. One of the Pharisees asked Jesus to eat with him, and Jesus went into the Pharisee's house and he took his place at the table. So here's Jesus out to dinner with a Pharisee. Now, a Pharisee is a religious leader of the day. And when Jesus went into this dinner party, suddenly it's crashed by a most unwelcome visitor. Verse 37, and behold, says Luke, look, you're not going to believe this, says Luke, look. A woman of the city who was a sinner, when she learned that Jesus was reclining at table in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster flask of ointment and stood behind him at his feet. Can you believe it, says Luke? Can you believe your eyes? And he points to do you see how he describes her? A woman of the city who was a sinner. Now, I reckon I know exactly what Luke is saying. This woman of the city, this sinner, this was a prostitute. Often seen late at night drumming up business on street corners. And for us to be kind of really to understand the shock of this moment and this woman turning up on that day, we kind of need to get a bit streetwise here. Standing behind Jesus and in the home of a highly religious man was a woman in a very short leather skirt, blouse undone, revealing her. Well, let's leave that to your imagination, shall we? Although I'm not sure it is something I should be encouraging you to imagine. Anyway, here's this woman wearing heavy makeup and cheap jewelry. And if you can bear the detail, arms scarred from the constant use of banned substances. Here was a poor woman who desperately lost her way in life. A woman who'd been used and abused by many, many men. Now, if we can get that picture in our head, we might begin to feel the embarrassment and complete outrage of this scene. When this woman walked in, what was an ordinary dinner party became far from ordinary. If it wasn't so serious, it would sound like the first line of a joke. Have you heard the one about the Pharisee, the prophet, and the prostitute? But this is no laughing matter. Just this woman being there would have given the tabloids a field day as the paparazzi captured this woman standing behind Jesus in a Pharisee's house. It's like something straight out of the Epstein files, I reckon. And if her simply being there was not shocking enough, what she then did as she joined the party rocks you to your boots. Verse 38, she stood behind Jesus at his feet, weeping. She began to wet his feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair, the hair of her head, and kissed his feet and anointed them with the ointment. Now, no doubt this woman has gate-crashed many a party in her time, and like all good party-goers, she took a bottle with her. But this was no bottle of plonk. No, this was a bottle of perfume, expensive perfume, that she poured over Jesus' feet. And then she undid the clip in her hair, and as her hair tumbled down, she used it to dry Jesus' feet. And here's the thing, Jesus doesn't flinch. He just sat there and let her the whole time. Now, can you imagine it? The embarrassed silence, the other guests tutting, muttering under their breath. Really, I mean what does she think she's doing? And then looking at Jesus, and how can he let her do it? Can you imagine how the Pharisee felt? His dinner party ruined? Have you ever ruined a dinner party? I nearly did a few years ago. We'd been offered an aperitif when we arrived, and then we moved from the living room to the dining room. And I really don't remember how the subject came up. But as we were moving from the living room to the dining room, I was yapping on about how I didn't like fish. And as we took our places at the table, I continued chuntering on about my great dislike of fish. And as we took our seats at the table, I only stopped blabbing when Caroline, who was by now sitting opposite me, was kicking me under the table. And I looked at her, and she looked at me, and then she looked at the plate in front of me, a plate of smoked salmon. Well, we were with friends, and we all had a laugh about it, and Caroline loves salmon, so she polished off my plate, and we went on to have a delightful evening. But the same couldn't be said about this dinner party. I mean, allowing a prostitute to wash your feet in the middle of your coq au vin was enough to make anyone choke on their prawn cocktail. It would even make the fruit salad stick in your throat. And frankly, this is just too much for some people today. Many years ago, I was invited to give a short talk at the dinner party at a couple's home. The hosts invited a number of people, friends, neighbours, family members. And their front room was packed. There were far more people there than I expected to be there. And when I got there, and along with all the other guests, we were handed a beverage of our choice and we enjoyed some delicious canapés. And then the host introduced me to everyone in the room. They knew I was going to be there, but he introduced me and he said that I would speak for 10 minutes. And then after that, there would be an opportunity for questions. So I spoke for 10 minutes and I told the people there of Jesus' death on the cross and how we could have our sin forgiven, a completely fresh start with God and be completely forgiven for anything that we've done, anything at all. And all we had to do was put our trust in Jesus. And when I finished, without hesitation, one of the guests said, "Now let me get this straight. You're saying that no matter how bad a person has been, they can be forgiven and go to heaven?" And I said, "Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. Isn't that terrific news?" "No," he said. "I think it's outrageous. Surely you're not saying that the murderer and the terrorist and the prostitute can come to Jesus? That I cannot accept." But that is exactly what this is saying. So you look down to the end of the story. We'll go through the rest of the story in a moment. Just look down to the end of the story in verse 48. Jesus said to that woman, verse 48, "Your sins are forgiven." Now, while that might be outrageous news for some, it is wonderfully good news for many. You see, if you think I'm too bad to be forgiven, then this is very good news for you. Because if this woman can be forgiven, having lived the way she lived, then, well, then you and I can too. I've got to say that when I first heard this on the 25th of March 1983, I thought this was the most brilliant news I'd ever heard. Because I know I've blown it. Honestly, if some of you knew the things that I had done, I guess some of you wouldn't want to listen to me tonight. And I guess there'll be some here this evening who feel the same way about themselves. For all I know, there might well be a prostitute here among us. I don't know if there is or not. I'm pretty certain, though, that there will be many here who've had sexual encounters of which they're terribly ashamed. Maybe things that nobody else knows about, but you know. Those who've used a prostitute, those who find themselves ensnared by pornography, others caught up in an adulterous affair, many who've simply gone along with the culture and had sex with any number of boyfriends or girlfriends, and those encounters have kind of left their mark. The guilt and shame of the unwanted pregnancy, the abortion, or just the emptiness of having made something so special, so cheap. Well, listen, if that's you, and whether it's sort of sexual issues or not, it might be something else. This encounter tells you and me that when it comes to Jesus, we discover that nothing's too bad to be forgiven. And that is very good news because forgiveness is such a very wonderful thing. To know that you're right with God. The film Pretty Woman was released many years ago. It's about a prostitute meeting a wealthy businessman and the two of them falling in love. To my mind, it's not a great film, but there is a great line in it. Edward Lewis, played by Richard Gere, asked Vivian Ward, Julia Roberts, why she became a prostitute when she could be so much more and do so much more with her life. And he says, if people put you down enough, you start to believe it. And he tells her, "I think you're very bright, a very special woman." To which she replies, "The bad stuff is easier to believe. Have you ever noticed that?" It's a great line. The bad stuff is easier to believe. Have you ever noticed that? And some of us here will have noticed that. I've experienced it. Repeatedly hearing bad stuff about myself. And the bad stuff seems to shout so much louder than any of the affirming comments that you might hear. And it bores deep down into your soul. And because the bad stuff is so much easier to believe, it wrecks your life. Now look, whatever people have said about you in the past, or even if it's still going on in the present, and whatever you believe about yourself now, because the bad news is easier to believe, let me urge you, plead with you this evening to hear and really believe this astonishingly good stuff. The good news of the Christian gospel is that anyone can come to Jesus and have the bad stuff wiped clean. have a completely fresh start. Such a wonderful thing. That's what we see here. And so to those who say, I'm too bad to be forgiven, this encounter says, no, you're not. The grace of God is big enough for you. Now, if I'm too bad for God is the first misunderstanding that I come across, the second is the opposite, and it's this: I don't need to be forgiven. In other words, I'm already good enough. Look, the dinner party has been wrecked by this loose woman, and the Pharisee is beside himself, and he's thinking, surely Jesus can't be a prophet if he's letting this woman touch him. That's verse 39 as we turn back to the story. You see, when the Pharisee who'd invited Jesus saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would have known who and what sort of woman this is who's touching him, for she is a sinner. The Pharisee, this respectable religious man, had invited Jesus to dinner because the word on the street was that Jesus was a prophet. By now, as far as the Pharisee was concerned, this episode with this woman called this Jesus into question. See, more than one or two families in the town had been torn apart by men paying this woman a visit. One of the most disturbing experiences of my life was to visit a family just after the husband had admitted to an adulterous affair. The teenage daughter gave me a call, said, can you come round? And as I walked in the house, the pain that his wife and teenage daughter were feeling was tangible. There was such tension in the air, understandably. His wife and daughter distraught. They had this combination of disgust and disappointment and disbelief that he'd done such a thing. Well, look, marriages had broken down after men had spent a night in a sleazy motel room with this woman. So, of course, the Pharisee thought, if Jesus really is a prophet, how can he allow this sort of behavior in my house? How can he allow this woman to touch him? I mean, God is pro-family, isn't he? And this woman had flouted God's law, hadn't she? So in the Pharisee's mind, just sitting there and letting her do this does call Jesus' credentials into question, doesn't it? But before you come to the same conclusion, just read the next six words in verse 40. Look at these six words, they're dynamite. And Jesus answering said to him. Do you see why those are so astonishing? The Pharisee hadn't uttered a word in verse 39. Everything in verse 39 was going on in his own head. He said to himself, if this was a prophet, he would know who's touching him and what kind of woman she is. It's exactly what we saw this morning if you were here. He said that to himself. And then verse 40, Jesus answered him. Now that really is something. As I said this morning, Jesus knows what we're thinking. What a shock for the Pharisee. One minute concluding that Jesus couldn't possibly be a prophet, the very next moment realizing that Jesus could read his mind. That's very scary. And not just for the Pharisee, that's pretty scary for you and me. This means that Jesus Christ knows the deepest thoughts of our hearts. He knows what makes us tick. He knows what drives us. He knows our every thought. Oh, the good thoughts, but all the bad ones too. The thoughts of envy and greed and malice. He knows when we wanted something bad to happen to someone because they've crossed us. He's seen us lust after someone else's spouse. He knows what we think. And he knows what we think of him. So this is serious because when it's my thought life that's being listened to, I don't know about you, but I'm in very deep water. Because again, as I said this morning, here in my head, in my thoughts, well, I can look respectable to you, but this really says what I'm like. And it's not very pretty. And so if, like the Pharisee, you think, I'm a pretty good person. Oh, no, not perfect, but then no one's perfect. If you think, I'm one of the good guys, really. If that's how you think, well, this is where it gets really uncomfortable and pretty personal. I say that because at this point, the Pharisee has only been called the Pharisee. He's nameless. We've only known him as one of the Pharisees. But now we learn his name because now it's getting personal. Look at verse 40. Jesus answered him, said to him, Simon, I've something to say to you. And he answered, say it, teacher. A certain money lender had two debtors. One owed 500 denarii, the other 50. When they could not pay, he cancelled the debt of both. Now, which of them do you think will love him more? It's a penetrating question, not a difficult question, but penetrating. And he's asked the question to help him see what he's really like. And to help us to answer it, I think I need to be the currency converter, because this stuff of denarii might not mean very much to us. So 50 denarii is about a month and a half's wages. I'm told the average salary in Britain is about £37,500. So 50 denarii is £4,500 in today's money. 500 denarii is £45,000 in today's money. So these are not small sums of money. So in today's money, let me read it again, verse 41. Two men owed money to a certain moneylender. One owed him £45,000, the other £4,500. Neither of them had the money to pay him back, so he cancelled the debts of both. Now, which of them will love him more? It's not a difficult question. And Simon the Pharisee got it right, verse 43. Simon answered, "The one, I suppose, for whom he cancelled the larger debt." And Jesus said, "You've judged rightly." Straight to the top of the class, Simon. Of course, if you owed someone £4,500 and you couldn't pay, and they turned around one day and said, "Let's call it quits, shall we?" Well, you'd be grateful. I'd be thrilled. If you owed them £45,000 and they wrote off the debt, well, you'd love them to bits, wouldn't you? Put them straight to the top of your Christmas card list. The answer to Jesus' question is easy and obvious. You and I know the answer. And Simon the Pharisee knew the answer, but look at Simon's reluctance to answer. End of verse 42. "Now, which of these will love him more?" Simon answered, "The one, I suppose, for whom he cancelled the larger debt." Do you see what's happening? We're getting very personal here. And Simon the Pharisee knew it. Oh, Jesus is not suddenly deciding to pursue a career as a financial consultant. He's not changed from his profession from prophet to banker. No, this story is about owing money, is leading somewhere. And Simon knew it. When Jesus tells a story about two people, up to this point, apart from Jesus, there's only been two people in the story, hasn't there, at the dinner party? Simon the Pharisee and the woman. And Simon got the point. Simon, two people owed a debt. Simon, you're one of them. Simon, you're in debt. Simon, your spiritual bank balance is not in great shape, you know. Simon, you're a debtor and you can't pay the debt. Simon, you're a sinner, up to your neck in spiritual debt, and you don't have the means to pay. It's getting very personal now and very uncomfortable for Simon. Because you see, he was very religious and very respectable. And yet Jesus says to him, "You're a sinner." And so we can bet our bottom dollar that if Jesus said that to Simon, he says it to every one of us here this evening, because, well, looking out at you, you're very respectable too. Oh, you seem to be very polite people. If Jesus would say it to him, he'd say it to us. It's not a very popular way to talk these days. An article in the Sunday Times a few years back said this: people don't avoid sin anymore, they avoid being found out. A spot of adultery is okay as long as no one gets hurt. Eating yourself stupid is fine as long as your stomach doesn't get fat and your face doesn't turn brick red. And some sins are not even wrong. Anger, well, that's just letting off steam. Envy gives you the urge to get on in life. Sins don't really exist as a serious thought in modern day life. At best, they're a delicious tease. Now, I reckon that's right on the money. Sin doesn't really exist as a serious thought in modern life, and especially among religious people and respectable people like Simon the Pharisee, and, well, like me, and may I suggest even like you. Largely, we don't see ourselves as sinners. We're not really bad sinners anyway, because we can always point to someone else who's worse than us, and you see, that's exactly what Simon the Pharisee was doing. Look at this woman. I'm nothing like her. I can always find someone who's made bigger mistakes than me. Do you do that? And in a perverted way, I quite like it when I see somebody else who's blown it in a bigger way than me, because I can point to them and feel good about myself. But you see what Jesus does here. Oh, yeah, there may be people who owe the equivalent of £45,000. But you owe the equivalent of £4,500 and you cannot pay it back. You're up to your neck in debt. That's why Jesus told this little story. to show Simon his sin. And to show Simon that it's no good hiding behind religiosity or respectability. And certainly no good comparing ourselves to others, because you can always find someone else who's worse than you. So there are some people like the prostitute who feel they're so bad that God couldn't possibly forgive them. There are other people like Simon the Pharisee who think they're so good that they don't need God's forgiveness. And then thirdly and more briefly, there are those who think that the grace of God means they can just go and live however they like. Oh, this story deals with that issue as well. Look with me at verse 44. Jesus turned towards the woman and said to Simon, "Do you see this woman?" I love that. "Do you see this woman? From the moment the prostitute crashed the party, Simon hadn't been able to take his eyes off her. Not because he fancied her, but because she'd wrecked his party. So did he see her? Of course he saw her. He saw everything she did. But had he really seen her? Had he really understood her actions for what they were? Had he seen her actions of love and devotion to Jesus? And had he seen how her actions were in stark contrast to his?" See, halfway through verse 44, Jesus said to Simon, "I entered your house, you gave me no water for my feet, but she has wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You gave me no kiss, but from the time I came in, she's not ceased to kiss my feet. You did not anoint my head with oil, but she's anointed my feet with ointment." Simon, you're so morally outraged by her past that you can't see what she's doing in the present. Simon, you're so self-righteous in the present that you can't see your past. This woman demonstrated her love for Jesus in the most extravagant and exuberant way. She loved Jesus because she knew what it was to be forgiven by him. You see, it turns out, and this is the real twist in the story, it turns out this wasn't the first time that this woman had met Jesus. We can't see it in our translation, but it's in the original. Verse 48 is not, "Your sins are now at this moment forgiven," but rather, "Your sins have been forgiven at some point in the recent past." It seems this woman had already met Jesus somewhere, and that meeting had completely changed her life. And that's why she burst into this dinner party, because she knew what it was to have the slate wiped clean, the debt cancelled. And she was bowled over by his love and his amazing grace. And she simply wanted to love him back. That's what the grace of God does for us. It is utterly life transforming. She'd been forgiven and she couldn't go back to her old life any more than somebody being rescued from a swirling river would go and jump back into it. And you see, when we know Jesus' forgiveness, when we know the amazing grace of God, it changes us forever. Because for Jesus to win us forgiveness cost him everything. We've sung about it again and again in the songs that we've sung this evening. You can read about it at the end of Luke's gospel. When Jesus died on the cross, he died so that our debt could be cancelled. He said these words, "It is finished." In the original, it's one word, tetelestai, and it means the debt is paid. Back in the day, if you owed some money and you had a bill and you paid the bill, you would take it into the shop and the shopkeeper would get a rubber stamp and he'd put paid on it, and you know you don't have to pay it anymore. Tetelestai, it is paid. One word, paid. As Jesus died on the cross, he said, "I've paid for your sin. It's done." And so you see, he's paid for our spiritual debt. It's as if he did get a giant eraser and rub out all the wrong in the past. But here's the thing. He didn't do it with a giant eraser. He didn't even do it by transferring a large amount of money from his bank account into ours. He did it by dying on a cross. It cost him the most costly thing it could cost him. And when we realize that, we can never be the same again. We won't just carry on as we did before. Will be utterly transformed. That's what happened to this woman. Well, three things to think about. If you've come in here tonight and you've thought, "I'm too bad to be forgiven," know that you're not too bad and Jesus can forgive you. If you came in here tonight and you thought, "I don't know why I've come in because I'm a good person," Jesus says, actually, no one's good. You do need forgiveness, but I can give it to you. And if you come in here this evening thinking, you know, the worst thing about being forgiven is you can just go and live however you like. This woman says, no, no, no. When you're truly forgiven, you live differently out of thankfulness and love for Jesus. Well, enough from me. Thanks so much for listening. It's been lovely being with you all day. Now, some of you might be here saying, you know, I'd really like to follow this up. I think Al might say some more about this before we're done. But you could do no better than either to come back during this week to one of the other events, but not least of all, to take away Luke's gospel and look at this bookmark that's inside. And that'll give you some ideas as to ways that you could follow this up and know the wonder of forgiveness.